It's 420, the day that Snoop Dogg shows up tonight to bring all the good little boys and girls their present. Maybe I've got that confused with something else. It is Security Weekly News, though. Today, naughty vaccines. Air frying is not frying. I'm sorry. BGP is leaking. Code Cove, Lazarus, Google Alerts, Nitro Ransomware, and more. All this and Jason Wood on the triumphant return of Security Weekly News.
This is Security Weekly. For security professionals, by security professionals.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week. Your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News. Cyber criminals are working overtime. They're leveraging activity around the COVID vaccine to disguise phishing attacks, hoping to steal money or personal information from your employees or customers. The Barracuda Email Threat Scanner is a free tool you can use right now to help protect your business and ultimately your reputation. The Barracuda Email Threat Scanner analyzes your Office 365 accounts and identifies malicious emails that slip past your gateway and into inboxes. Find the cybersecurity threats hiding in your Office 365 email. Use the Barracuda Email Threat Scanner for free right now at securityweekly.com/Barracuda. We're proud to announce CISO Stories, a new podcast series in partnership with Cybersecurity Collaborative and Cyber Reason. CISO Stories features the candid perspectives and experiences of frontline senior security executives and dives deep into timely security topics. CISO Stories is hosted by Todd Fitzgerald, VP of Cybersecurity Strategy at Cybersecurity Collaborative, and Sam Curry, Chief Product and Security Officer at Cyber Reason. Listen weekly as they speak with extraordinary CISOs by visiting securityweekly.com/CSP.
All right, on the 420 day, if that's legal wherever you may be, a major BGP leak occurred last week. If there was ever a nerd headline, that's it. I mean, if you even understood what that meant, then, you know, sorry, you have no further, you know, business being in normal society. But a major BGP leak occurred last week while we were away. Basically, BGP's Border Gateway Protocol, it's a routing protocol. It's used by the backbone providers on all the core routers and such, although you could use it other places. But this is, of course, what you use to find the best route between you and whatever site you're trying to connect to in the world. In fact, I was wondering if the Mars mission, so they were flying a drone around on Mars, which is pretty cool. Like the first time we know of anybody's flown a drone on another planet. I was wondering, like, you know, are they using like TCP/IP and there's like routed packets going up to Mars? I doubt it, but, you know, maybe there's a route to Mars out there. So if you find one, let us know. But anyway, this was a leak, maybe. It could be a hijack. In fact, different stories reported different ways. So one story reported it as a leak. Another one reported it as a hijack. And I'll tell you, so a leak is when somebody makes a mistake and routes are advertised that are incorrect and redirect traffic to the wrong place. When it's intentional, they usually call it a route hijacking. But we're not totally sure exactly what happened here. So different people sort of positioned it in different ways. But BGP has each of its participants in the routing advertise routes that they know about and how far away they are and so forth. So the whole system eventually converges and agrees on what the best route is to get from one place to another. So when a leak occurs, it's kind of like an example in Waze. So you type in that you want to go to the nearest llama farm, and Waze puts up suggestions with the distance and the time. So if there's a leak, you know, so Farmer Tom misrepresents his llama farm as being in Central Park when it's really in like Pearl River. So you say, okay, let's go to the llama farm in Central Park, and then you find that it's actually in Pearl River, and you're like, wait, I went to the wrong place, and there's no llama farm here, or it's a lot further than I thought, and we're going across the GWB going toward Pearl River, going, what the hell is going on? Anyway, a hijack occurs when Farmer Ann somehow corrupts the data to make Farmer Tom's llama ranch appear to be 500 miles away, so that you get all your llama milk from Farmer Ann instead. I swear I have not been imbibing on 420. I promise. I'm just like this. But basically, it looks like some hijack networks in India began advertising false information, and in about an hour, it spread all over the place, as that's what it's supposed to do, and it pushed all this traffic toward the Vodafone network. So there's quite a few participants in Vodafone, And they had about 13 times their usual traffic. So it had this sort of effective denial of service kind of impact on the network. The cause, according to one of the articles, was a lack of proper defenses, which is called the mutually agreed norms for routing security on the Vodafone routers. And of course, that basically then allowed someone to hijack the router or make a mistake. But the main article I was referring to, which I put in the wiki, basically says it's a hijack. I don't know where their information comes from, though. Code Cove, an online software testing platform that some of you may be familiar with. It's used with GitHub projects to generate code coverage reports and stats. It's used by more than 29,000 organizations, lots of whom I'm sure you've heard of. But they suffered from a supply chain attack that went undetected for over 2 months. So apparently, credentials were recovered from a Docker image that they had put up, which allowed the attacker, so they had like hard-coded credentials in the Docker image. It was a misconfigured Docker, never heard that before. It allowed the attacker to alter a bash uploader script that the Code Cove's clients used. So what they did was they took that bash script, they changed the IP from Code Cove's correct IP to another IP, which was theirs. And then basically what happened was all the customers were uploading their credentials to a third party, which contained tokens, API keys, environment variables, all sorts of stuff. This breach started apparently at the end of January, and hundreds of customer networks were subsequently breached until they found the problem the 1st of April. The FBI, the DHS, and Code Cove are all investigating, and basically, if you are a Code Cove customer and you have used this uploader, they are advising you to reset all your credentials, all your keys, and audit for any unusual activity. So I'm presuming some people have had problems with this. Google Alerts, which most everyone already ignores due to the number of scams that you get when you put up, although a lot of us still use Google Alerts for things, but there's a lot of scams in there. And apparently, according to this article, there was a large uptick in bad actor activity lately. Alerts were being pushed out that contain your keywords, but they lead to a series of sites that eventually hits one of those pop-up pages that's got porn, malware, sweepstakes, chain letters, QAnon theory, all the usual stuff. So basically the way they're doing this is called cloaking. And what that is where you basically abuse search engine optimization. And the way you do that is by you put up a page that's just text, and you show that text to the spiders that crawl all the pages and collect keywords and build the Google index engine. And so that page has just like tons and tons of content with really, good words on it that are going to draw people to it. And so basically, once that happens and it gets on the index for Google, the bot sees this big collection of text, lots of keywords, says this is a great page for that. It gets pushed up the index at Google. But when you click on that link in a search, the URL is a redirect, and it takes and pushes you off to some malware site. It's definitely worth letting your people know to be careful with Google Alerts if you haven't already, because this has been a much increased activity there. Lazarus Group, well known, a North Korean APT, reputedly, is using a new technique to conceal code in a BMP file to get past embedded object detection. So as we've gotten smarter at the border, we have added, the ability to look deeper into these objects. It's layer 7, layer 8 kind of concepts. And basically, they're putting this inside a BMP. So what they did was they have an HTA file, so an HTML application file that has malicious code in it. They compress the file in a zlib. So that's a standard kind of compression. And then put the zlib inside of a PNG file. Okay. Now, during runtime, the PNG file is converted into a BMP format, and the BMP, which gets uncompressed, then automatically decompresses the zlib object, which releases the code that slipped through your defenses. The HTA that they've been using is a remote access Trojan. So, you can use a whole pile of acronyms. You want to tell the HTA drops a rat, on and on and on. But the full analysis from Malwarebytes is on the wiki. So you can read that they had a lot of details about how this works and how they're doing it and so forth. It was a pretty interesting story I saw about the FBI. So we're all pretty familiar with Hafnium, which was Microsoft code for the APT that originally was exploiting the proxy logon hole. So there's been tons and tons of stories about that, you know, and the Exchange server compromise and all this stuff. And we've talked about it unendingly. So, you know, I mean, after this got out, everybody started using it. So I sort of started calling it Fulnium instead of Hafnium, because now everybody's got it. Everybody's using it. They're pushing it out. Old news. But as ever, a lot of people didn't patch their systems. I mean, imagine that. And no matter how much we yapped about it and yelled about it and said, patch, 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 people still didn't patch. So this is what got good. The FBI went to court and they got a warrant which would allow them to hack vulnerable servers using this proxy logon exploit. No kidding. And when they did it, they hacked the servers that they found that were vulnerable. They executed remote code, which of course is what the vulnerability leads to, and it allowed them to delete the web shell. I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. I'm not sure. It was apparently all government sites that they did this to. But as far as I know, this is a first for hacking back. I mean, certainly hacking back's always been controversial. The government tells you not to do it. You know, it's theoretically illegal and so on and so forth. But this is the first case where they did it with a court order and that the court gave them approval. So I'm sure this was an interesting request for a warrant down at some federal court somewhere. I don't know where they did that, but it was a pretty interesting story. So you might want to check that out. Geico Insurance, with their very well-known insurance ads that they put everywhere, they disclosed that driver's license numbers had been compromised in a data breach. The company revealed that between 21 January and 1 March, a credential stuffing attack, imagine that, through the online sales system on Geico website occurred, and you know, people were able to get this. Geico said that if you receive unusual notifications from the state, particularly unemployment type notices or other similar unusual information, you should contact the authorities. I don't know if I've gotten two of these false unemployment claims now that said that I had filed for unemployment with some other address. And, you know, so all they need is a few pieces of information and then they can file this stuff and see if they get lucky and get it deposited in a bank account somewhere. We have so many of these here that to the state police actually is an automated site for reporting it so that you don't actually go through that. Nitro ransomware has a new tactic. Instead of Bitcoin, it asks for Discord Nitro gift codes. Really? The ransomware encrypts files on a local system and then warns you that you have 3 hours to provide a Discord Nitro code to the attacker. These are like $9 or something on Discord. The malware can be identified by the give me Nitro is what it puts as an extension on all the files. And the wallpaper in your system is changed to an angry Discord logo. So their little whatever that thing is called, Wumpus or something, I guess looks angrily at you. Once you provide the gift code, the malware decrypts the files. Now, the 3-hour time limit doesn't apparently do anything. So when the time runs out, it just sits on zero. And the decryption keys are static. So I wouldn't pay them if I were you. You should be able to extract the decryption keys and unencrypt your files pretty easily. But the malware is distributed as a supposedly free gift code generator for Nitro. So I'm guessing they're going after script kiddie types who are playing games on Discord and go, oh, well, I can get free codes. But I guess, you know, so that would be my suspicion about that. So we've seen. When we return, the amazing Jason Wood. Stick around.
As technology continues to evolve and expand, so have the attackers that put our critical systems in jeopardy. Core Impact from Core Security is a penetration testing tool that safely finds vulnerabilities using the same techniques of adversaries, with certified exploits and wizards that guide you through critical pen tests while maximizing the time of advanced testers by automating their routines. With Core Security, you can safeguard your infrastructure by limiting access, detecting threats, testing for security weaknesses, and efficiently monitoring data. Visit securityweekly.com/core security.
Writing under the pseudonym Larry G. Johnson, Jason spent years writing erotic vegetable poetry. His Watermelon and Easter Hay is considered standard erotic reading, and it's an all-time classic. And he joins us now in Security Weekly News. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Doug. Yeah, that was a hit piece I didn't expect, but, you know, hey.
Sorry, I had to, you know, like dox you on that.
Secret's out now, I guess.
It is actually a Frank Zappa song that's pretty good, so.
So today I thought I'd, you know, we woke up to news today about Pulse Secure VPNs being under attack again. And Reuters has an article that I've got in the show notes, along with some others that I'll talk about as we go through, talking about basically these are actively being exploited. And this is again, one of those kind of nightmare scenarios where we've got, as defenders, where we've got a vulnerability out there, no patch, and like Doug said, though, a bunch of people aren't going to apply it anyway, but no patch to defend ourselves, though there is a workaround for it. Now, Reuters, the Reuters article focuses heavily on attribution. It's the Chinese, they're out to get us and stuff like that. That's not news to anybody, but it makes for a really good headline and gets people's attention. But really, I wanted to kind of look at this as, you know, hey, what are we going to do as defenders, right? We've got to deal with this. And so this was something I wanted to talk about because it's, if you're a user of Pulse Secure VPN, then you have an issue here that you need to be prepared for. They've had a bit of a rough time. They've been attacked, you know, targeted by a number of different adversaries over the last couple years or so, since 2019. And they've been releasing software updates to address these issues, but we've been hit with a new zero day. At this point, there is no patch. It sounds like it's going to be a while. Ivanti, the owner of Pulse Secure, has said that they won't have a patch until probably May. So in the meantime, we as defenders, or as you know, any Pulse Secure customers are just going to have to kind of hang in there, be on alert, and be prepared to respond to any potential intrusions due to this issue while they wait for a patch to come out. Now, Pulse Secure has released some workarounds, so we're not totally dead in the water if you're running this software. There's a knowledge base article, I've got it in the show notes as well, that basically provides an XML file for you to reconfigure your VPN appliance. And this disables a couple of features, the Windows File Share browser and the Pulse Secure collaboration features get disabled. And this apparently will prevent this from being exploited by the attacker. Now, that's great if you don't use it. If you are dependent on those features, then this could be more of a problem. So that's something you would want to check into before you just drop this out here. Maybe something that we have to take down for a few weeks while we wait for a patch. But so there is one option for you. If you are running the VPN and you're concerned whether or not you've already been hit with it, they actually have a utility that you can run on the system to check the integrity of the device and make sure that you don't have any issues. If you do, then you can contact Pulse Secure about, you know, next steps and what is going on there. One caveat, though, I noticed a tweet from Katie Nichols basically saying that the Integrity Assurance utility can reportedly destroy forensic artifacts, so you should capture memory and disk images before running it to ensure you can conduct an investigation. So if that's a concern to you, that is something to be aware of. There's a potential issue there. Maybe double check with Pulse Secure and see what they say about that. But you don't want to just fire this off at this point without checking that if you are concerned about collecting those artifacts. FireEye itself has released a blog post on this. They're working with, apparently, Ivanti in response to the intrusion. And they're going through a lot of the malware and stuff like that that has been exploiting this this vulnerability, and what are they seeing and how does it work. Some of the things I thought were interesting as far as the different variants of the malware being used to target this. One, for example, bypasses authentication, whether it's single factor or multi-factor authentication. It plugs itself in there and they can get around it that way. There's the credential harvesting piece that is basically logging credentials to a file on disk for later collection. And then they have the ability, you know, through another variant to install a, if you will, a magic password into the system. So if the attackers have that, they can just authenticate directly to it and move on from there. Some good information here to check out as far as the technical write-up of what's going on. Finally, I wanted to add just a few personal thoughts here for additional defensive considerations. And as a disclaimer, you know, I work on a threat hunting team. So, you know, I'm a little bit biased, if you will, on this, but be hunting for follow-on activity. One of the things that has become very clear to me over the past few years working on threat hunting is that we have very intelligent thinking adversaries on the other side of this. They're looking for weaknesses and they find the mistakes that organizations make. They find things like, you know, these zero days and exploit them to get into organizations. But once they arrive into a network, it's really hard maybe to detect that first instance of exploitation, but every time now as they're conducting their operations, they're giving us more and more information about what they're doing, what their goals are, giving us opportunities basically to spot them. You know, what accounts are they operating under? What systems are they on? So, you know, be hunting for that type of information. Be looking for it. The scales tip back into our favor a little bit as defenders if we are actively going out and seeking this information and not sitting back and waiting for some monitoring system to pop up with an alert and say, hey, we've got a problem on system X, Y, and Z. So that is something that I would look at doing. I mean, spend some time thinking about it. If I had compromised this VPN system and I get connected to it on some non-corporate system, right? Actor-controlled system. What could I do from here? What are some artifacts that would show up? Well, if we're bypassing authentication, why is somebody logged in twice from two different locations? So, you know, that would be something to hunt on and take a look at. Think about how this could apply to your environment and where they would go. Look for odd network connections. And that allows you to start performing your investigation. Now, obviously, you can use the integrity monitoring piece as well. But if I'm trying to keep an actor from pivoting around in my environment, that is a way for me to get some insight on what's going on and help me in my response. So go ahead, check out the show notes. We've got the links there for you. I've got all the articles, tweets, and blog posts that I've mentioned. If you are running Pulse Secure, you obviously need to be on a higher state of alert right now. Take a look at the activity occurring on these devices. This is definitely a concern because it is actively being exploited. So, that's kind of our to-do list for the week. We got to dive on this. We're running those systems. Doug, back to you.
Thank you. Yeah, I started to like not be sitting here when we came back from that. So it could be like, sorry, I had to go fix my VPN. So I thought that might be a poignant thing to do. Thanks, Jason. And finally, so Talos at Cisco's threat group found two big vulnerabilities, and wait for it. I know you thought I was going to say Cisco, but I'm not going to say Cisco. What they found was that the Kasori Smart Air Fryer, whatever the hell that is, I don't even know why you would need such a thing. I guess people want Wi-Fi enabled smart air fryers. I don't know what the smart, anyway, we know all about all my IoT biases. But anyway, I don't even know what the hell an air fryer actually is. But there were two CVEs that are old that were found in this air dryer, which would essentially allow an attacker to change the temperatures, the times, the settings, or even cause it to start up without you being home. So, you know, can you say Stuxnet? Sticky net? I don't know. Something like that. I mean, imagine the horror of coming home to find your whole house smelling like deep frying. Well, actually, maybe not, because air frying is like a sexy way to say convection oven, which you can't actually fry something in. Because if you want to fry something, you need a big, deep vat of pork lard waiting for you to drop in a donut to cook. And then, yes, they used to cook donuts in pork lard. In fact, they cooked everything in pork lard. I worked at a truck stop. Every single dish started with a big scoop of pork lard on a grill, and it was really good. And you take that, some unfiltered cigarettes, a nice martini every night, and I guarantee you'll have that heart attack before retirement age. No problem. That's how it used to work. Anyway, the attack allowed you to put custom packets containing JSON objects onto the device, which allows for arbitrary frying air frying. Anyway, thanks, Jason. I'm Doug White. I'm now partially vaccinated with the chic Pfizer vaccine. I didn't even know there was a whole class war going on about Pfizer. And this one gives you naughty dreams about Bill Gates rubbing you all over with 5G waves.